And today we're opening up a public hearing on House Bills 5020 and 5021, State School Fund and School Improvement Fund. Today we're having public testimony on both bills. And without delay, I'm going to call up Jeff Sanders and Tricia Yates, I think are the first panel. So have you come up, and then following that we have the next panel, Lori Wimmer-Whalen, Rebecca Levison, Mary Nimitt, and Tony Crawford. So, thanks, Yates. Mr. Sanders, welcome.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair Galicia, Senator Morse. I'm Tricia Yates, the new Director of Legislative and Public Affairs for the Oregon School Boards Association. It's a privilege to be here to accompany our President, Jeff Sanders, of the Jefferson County School District, in offering testimony in support of a Ways and Means budget that significantly invests in K-12 education. Our support derives from the OSBA's top legislative priority of K-12 funding adequacy. As approved by our members, this priority is to support an appropriation to the 07-09 State School Fund that exceeds the essential budget level target by an amount that represents significant progress toward attainment of adequate funding as defined by the quality education model. As a partner in the Education Coalition, and I know you've received multiple copies and another one yesterday of this document, we're very proud of it. We're proud of our partnership with the members of the coalition. We support a $6 billion appropriation to the State School Fund that would represent significant progress toward achieving the QEM. We also support an additional targeted investment of $300 million in student achievement through the School Improvement Fund. Senate Bill 318, the School Improvement Fund bill, provides an opportunity for targeted and accountable investments that focus on student achievement. OSBA continues to actively support the purpose and the validity of the QEM as an accurate measurement of the appropriation required to fully achieve the goal of 90% of students reaching standards. And we believe an investment of $6.3 billion moves the state to 80.9% of full funding of the QEM. We urge your support of it. At this time, I thank you for the opportunity. It's my privilege to turn the podium over to our President, Jeff Sanders.
Good afternoon, Chairman Felicio and members of the committee. I am Jeff Sanders, school board member from the Jefferson County 509J School District in Madras, and I'm the elected president of the Oregon School Board Association. As you may know, the Oregon School Board Association represents more than 1,400 locally elected school boards and education service district board members, and charged with the shaping of education programs for more than 56,000 kindergarten through 12th grade students in Oregon. Our members are also include board members from the 17 Community College and the State Board of Education. On behalf of the school board members across the state, I'm here to thank the Ways and Means co-chairs for their proposal of the $6.245 billion investment in the K-12 education. We support and thank them for making the significant progress towards a $6.3 billion goal set by a broad-based education coalition that included the OSBA. We urge your support of this funding level as your renewal of the state's commitment to the school children for the state of Oregon means the hope and for a brighter future for all of us. I have served on the Jefferson County 509J School Board for the past 18 years. For the children I have served in Jefferson County, your investment means that we will continue to serve one of the most diverse student populations in the state. With our current enrollment numbers at approximately 3,000, we have a representative in our school district, one-third Caucasian, one-third Latino, and one-third Native American student populations. With your financial support, we are committed to meeting the state and federal guidelines and standards for all of our students that we serve. This funding will allow us to continue to meet our next commitment to meet the academic standards that we have set for our future leaders. In closing, the Oregon School Board Association supports the progress of this legislature and co-chair that have made in firmly establishing the K-12 education as a priority for the state. However, in this context, we want to express a concern. It is important to the Oregon school children that we invest in their education, not only at the K-12 level, but throughout their education experience. The current proposal for the community college fundings are inadequate to meet the needs of the Oregon diverse education population. We urge that your greater investment in community college and the pledge of the OSBA that we will join you to find additional revenue so that the state can prioritize student needs for education opportunity at all levels in this growing Oregon economy through their success. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sanders, Ms. Yates. Are there any questions or comments? So, Mr. Sanders, you said 18 years on the school board?
10 years with the OSBA.
Wow. And you're the president now?
Of the Oregon School Board Association.
And when did that begin?
Last November.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
18 years, you should receive medals.
So should you, sir.
Well, I think school board is, I mean, that's extraordinarily difficult. You're right there in the nexus, and so appreciate your service. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for coming down and being here. Appreciate it. All right. Well, I'd like to call the panel, Lori Wimmer Whalen, Rebecca Levison, Mary Nemeth, and Tony Crawford. Okay.
Good afternoon, committee members, Mr. Chair. For your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the 46,000 members who are K-12 and community college employees in Oregon's public schools and community colleges. We're here today in support of the co-chair's budget of $6.245 billion, too. We've been talking about $6.3, and in my testimony, you'll see that I continue to round up. I would also like to point out that this is the first time in my 10 years with OEA that we haven't had hundreds of families and parents in the room, and you might be disarmed by that or concerned, but I would say that it is a symbol of the fact that the co-chair's budget was, for the first time in that last decade, offering the kind of rebuilding numbers that we've all sought for so long, and there's nothing like good news to clear a room. Before I share with you why I think this budget level is the right place to land, I thought I might give you a quick picture of how we arrived at our request. And by our, I am referring to the coalition that you've heard mentioned both in past testimony in previous days and then also this afternoon. Back in August of 2006, we at the Oregon Education Association asked a number of our partners and colleagues, the parent community, education community, business community, public officials, and others, to begin engaging with us in a conversation about school funding, student achievement, public education policy in general, and their intersecting points of how they all would work together as moving parts as we look forward to the 2007 session. And what emerged from those conversations was the coalition that we informally call the School Funding Coalition. And yesterday you received this brochure, which was our first work product, and you probably all have it in your file at least once, if not multiple times, because we've made the rounds with it. And it outlines our vision of how the student achievement initiatives in the school improvement fund might be invested, depending on how school districts might deploy any resources you send their way in that budget, 5021. We also created a document that you have before you today that I've circulated that looks like this. And it is a collection of 23 different school districts from around the state and how they believe they would use those targeted resources in their school districts. These are school districts as small as Adrian and as large as Portland, representing over half of the Legislative Assembly in terms of those districts that you all represent. Just to give you a taste and flavor for the kinds of initiatives that districts are already beginning to contemplate with respect to use of those dollars for boosting student achievement over and above the current services or the Build Back money. We came together because we believe that investing in public education is not just a human investment in creating an individual who becomes a worker in our society and a good citizen, but also an immediate economic investment. And to that end, to prove that case, I've also included for you yet another document. I know you're going to be reading every word of these. By economist, I know you will, Senator, by Dr. Richard Sims, who prepared for us an analysis of how education dollars circulate through the economy. Until we figured out how to offshore teaching jobs, the assumption is that those dollars stay in Oregon communities, and more than 50% of the communities in Oregon, the school district is the largest employer. And we've discovered that you can create an immediate economic stimulus through your education investment, and so we've provided those materials for your review as well. In any case, our coalition came together to try to figure out how best to articulate all these thoughts about the education investment, the human investment, the economic investment, and also the strategies for achieving student achievement through best practices. Our ideas track with both the quality education model's expectations around best practices and also the school improvement fund that was originally enacted by the legislature in 2001 and which Senate Bill 318 improves upon and updates, and that bill passed unanimously out of the Senate Education Committee and then and easily across the Senate floor and is now in the House's possession. We anticipate that that will enable us to update that school improvement law. And finally, our ideas also track, of course, with the Education Act for the 21st Century, which, in fact, is the roadmap to student achievement in Oregon. Our vision is simple. We ask that you join with us as a partnership. We ask you first to help us rebuild from the 7 devastating years of cuts in the recession and its aftermath, which was about a $1.2 billion loss to K-12. That mirrors $1,800 per student in losses in that 7-year period. We also ask you to help us move forward with innovations and interventions that go beyond simply a status quo budget. And finally, we will ask you, not today, but someday, to fully fund K-12 at an adequate level as outlined in the quality education model. And to that end, I would point out that the most recent work by the Quality Education Commission says that the state's share of the resources it would need to fully achieve the adequacy of K-12 funding for the 07-09 biennium would be $7.77 billion. And for you poets out there, that means our request is $1.47 billion less than the QEM's ideal vision and $1.525 billion less than the co-chair's recommended level. In all, our ask and that of the co-chairs is roughly, give or take a half a percent, about 80% of the quality education model if you should appropriate it. We set aside $6 billion in the state school fund in our vision and $300 million in the school improvement fund. The co-chairs have slightly differently structured that. We are very grateful for the level of funding that they recommend and believe that it comes very close to our vision for this upcoming biennium. With that, I'd rather turn the mic over to my panel of teachers who have a representative sampling of stories to tell about what they've coped with in the last 7 years of cut and what optimism they have for the future and to speak on behalf of their students. And then I'd be happy to take any questions you might have at the end. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Are you going to start, Ms. Levinson?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Levison. I am a sixth grade teacher in North Portland at Clarendon Elementary School. First of all, I'd really like to just thank you very much for your support of education funding in the current proposed budget, and I'm here to strongly encourage you to fund the K-12 budget at $6.3 billion. At that level, Portland Public Schools would be able to continue the level of programs and services offered in the current school year with no additional enrichments or buybacks. The past 7 years of budget cuts have greatly affected our district, our school, and our students. As you may recall, Portland teachers worked 10 days for free to keep a full school year intact during the most recent recession. And we did this because we knew that it was our most economically fragile students who could not afford the tutors and the outside programs to make up for the loss of 24 days that the district was recommending to cut. While others may recount the challenges and opportunities their districts and that of the state as a whole, I thought you might appreciate a peek at one inner city Portland school whose economic challenges, even in these really rebuilding years, are great. Clarendon Elementary, where I teach, was built in 1970, which makes it the third newest building in the district. The carpets have been replaced only once in the past 38 years, and when it rains heavily, which obviously happens quite a bit, the roof actually leaks in a variety of places throughout the building. In fact, the district said it would cost over $1 million to replace the roof. And so instead of replacing the roof and repairing it, we are actually merging now with Portsmouth Middle School. In fact, 29 schools are moving towards a K-8 structure, not necessarily because of educational considerations, but due in most part to financial reasons. I work with students whose families are really part of the working poor. These families work two, sometimes three jobs, have, especially many of them on night shifts so they can be home for their kids. 90% are on free and reduced lunch, and we feed them two out of three meals every day, so breakfast and lunch. As you know, good nutrition is a vital aspect to learning, and unfortunately, due to continued budget cuts over the past 7 years, the quality of the food that we serve has gone down precipitously. In fact, the central kitchen in at Portland Public Schools is now closed, and we're just serving this prepackaged food, which just gets heated up at school in its plastic containers. So it's not just the infrastructure and food program that continue to cheat my students. In programs too, we still do not have the resources to provide critical enrichments to the standard educational fare. So in a diverse school such as Clarendon, for instance, it's vital to expose students to a variety of subjects, particularly in music and art. Over 50% of the students that we serve are English language learners, and I actually have a master's degree in teaching English as a second language. We know how important that music can be in particular. Think about all the lyrics to the songs that you actually know, and how effortlessly it was to remember those and to learn those. It's vital that we continue and to actually have music in our schools. Tragically, we don't have an art teacher or a music teacher, and a few summers ago, I actually just took it upon myself and applied for a program to at the Metropolitan Opera Guild, and our students did an opera because I wanted to give them exposure to art, music, and drama that they're not presently getting with a licensed teacher in that area, although I am licensed. I just want to say that. That's why I'm here today on behalf of my students, to support the co-chair's recommended K-12 funding level of $6.245 billion. While it still falls somewhat short of our hopes, it would provide a significant boost to the public education of students, such as the ones that I serve at Clarendon. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Levison. You reminded me of song lyrics. I was thinking about Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. You can't always get what you want. I think it's appropriate in this building, but appreciate that. Are we just going to go one at a time? Question? Senator Morse?
If I may, Mr. Chair, the same question I asked yesterday, to your knowledge, would music, art, and drama be restored to your school with the funding level proposed by the co-chairs?
No, it would just continue the services that are continued right now. I mean, it would base at 6.3 is what I believe our district has balanced their budget on, that amount. So I don't believe that music, art, or PE would be restored. We simply don't have it. I'm sorry, we have PE, excuse me. We don't have music, art, or drama.
Senator Starkey. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the fact that Clarendon is merging with another school, and the district's going to K-8. The reason, purpose for that, primarily because of the fact that you have so many school buildings that are underutilized because you've had declining enrollment in the Portland public school system, and that the superintendent and school board are trying to manage the fact that you got a lot of buildings that aren't full, and you have to manage those resources. So isn't that appropriate use of public resources to consolidate instead of, you know, keep school buildings and facilities operating when amount of capacity and have underused space in other school districts?
Yeah, with all due respect, I understand that is a reasoning, and that is, I believe that is true across the district. In our particular case, when it was first announced that we were merging, it was because they could not pay for the roof, as well as we're right next to the New Columbia, which is a housing project, and we are exploding and seeing great numbers of increase. So we do not have declining enrollment in our North Portland area. So I'm not... but I do, yes, that is a strategy, obviously, to consolidate business or buildings.
And the song, Mr. Chair, that came to my head, and based on her testimony, is the raindrops keep falling on my head. Unfortunately, it's not. It shouldn't be like that if the kids are sitting in class.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
Senator Devlin.
There was a time, it was a relatively short period of time, when you were the closest probably to the quality education model of any district in the state. That's during the period of time when you had both the local income tax and the local option. Can you talk about the differences between then and now? Because what I heard from a lot of Portland teachers when I've talked to them, that it was like a golden era for teachers because the resources were there to do a lot of the things that they thought that should be done.
In which era are you talking? You mean when we just had the income tax?
When you had both. You had both for a while, actually. You had a period of time in which you had the income tax and the local option both in place. Maybe it might be better for Lori to comment on that, but it was the overlap, I think, was about a 3 to 4 year period, but you were the closest that any school district had ever been to a quality education model.
Mr. Chair and Senator Devlin, I might push back a little on the characterization of that as a golden era, but given that all things are relative, it certainly exceeded expectations compared to some of the districts of which I'm familiar and of places even today in terms of the level of funding. From our perspective, though, because there was the local support, temporary though it might be, that is part of the reason that Portland, even with the investment fund piece added to the state school fund, doesn't go beyond current service level. That is a current service level budget for them because of the loss of those local revenues. They have increased challenges compared to other districts in some respects, because when you are the parent of a special ed student who also has other kinds of diverse medical needs, and so when you tend to move to cities where those services are available, so there are a higher number of students with special needs, there are a higher number of students with English language learnings, actually a wide range, over 80 different languages spoken in Portland, and so they have unique challenges relative to the other 196 school districts that, though the money may have seemed richer for a period of time, also spent differently than it did elsewhere.
I don't remember a golden era.
Thank you. Ms. Neiman?
Okay. Well, Representative Galizio and the rest of the committee, thanks for having us here today. I recognize a lot of you. I like that. That was important. My name is Mary Namath, and I'm an 8th grade science teacher at Inslewood Middle School in Westland, Wilsonville. I've been a teacher for 28 years now, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to address you about some of the issues that are happening in my classroom and my school. To make you a little bit familiar with our district, we're south of Portland, and we cover a 42 square mile district, all over merging Westland and Wilsonville. We educate approximately 8,000 students a year, and in my school we have grades 6, 7, and 8. Inglewood is the oldest of the three middle schools that we've got. It was built in 1980, and we currently have an enrollment of 667 students, which is way above where I guess they were supposed to have 500, but they built a couple of housing developments, which there was no other funding for school, so they've all channeled into our side of the Westland-Wilsonville area. We recently finished a remodel, which we were really excited about, and got everything done but built new science classrooms, built new regular classrooms, put technology in place, and just as we unveiled the opening of the school last October, they had a great big celebration, and we just had that big rainstorm that had come through. Found out that some of those things they had just repaired weren't so great. We had computer keyboards, the top ventilation areas and places from the old part of the building hadn't had the repairs they needed, and they were dripping onto the new computers we had just put in, three brand new pods that now had water damage on them. Even with the passing of the bond this year, we have seven teachers who are cart teachers, which means that I put all my stuff on a cart that can fit through a 36-inch door, and from period to period, I go to where that teacher has a prep time, and I teach in that room, and then when I'm done there, because that teacher's coming back, I put all my stuff on this 36-inch cart and down the hallway, and I'm off to the next classroom that has prep time, and I teach there. And the kids know where to go, for the most part.
Mr. Chair, you're a cart lady?
It's not.
We
have no bags, but there's seven teachers
about
that do this on a daily basis.
Oh, that's
and that's just because we have too many kids, not enough classrooms, and when the bond went through, we didn't have the additional kids in Villebois and the other communities that were behind us. So now with all of these kids, there's no otherwise we've got 35 and 40 in our classrooms.
So where's your science teacher, right?
Yep.
Where's all your science teacher?
I have my stuff in my classroom, and I share that with another teacher for two periods. So they come into mine with my reptiles and my birds and all of those things and hope they're contained, and then they move on to another room.
Reptile education.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, is because middle school kids need that consistency. The fact that you don't have a teacher with a room that's set up the way that they want to have that room set up, I'm blessed that I get to have that. And as a science teacher, I did do that in Woodburn for 10 years, is we were on a cart. And at the end of our time, we did move. Here in Westland-Wilsonville, they did build the new science classrooms, but these other teachers that are having to come into our classrooms don't have that luxury, and next year they're looking at either portables or more teachers on carts. So everything you have has got to be mobile. When we start looking at this, and we're looked at as one of the better off districts in the state from anything that we read about, and so it very much worries me what someone in another district is doing if we're having a struggle like this.
Mm-hmm.
With the other issues that we've got in the classrooms, I have 119 students a day that I'm responsible for. And mine are all 8th graders. With that group, what I'm looking at is 30 to 34 kids in each of my periods, 58-minute periods, and of that time, two of my classes where I have ADHD, ADD kids, I have autistic kids, three who are on plans to be able to get them through the day, the regular IEP kids and the TAG kids, I don't have any help, and the NSTA recommends 24 students in a lab classroom. When I have 34 eighth graders who are not quite used to their bodies, they just developed since Christmas, it's a little difficult to get them to move and not knock over things and not to be as clumsy with size 15 feet that they're not used to paddling around hallways. Now, when you get into this with the kids, we've got 25% of our kids that are on free and reduced lunches. 24% of our kids will not make it from the time they hit our door in the sixth grade to the time eighth grade hits and we've had a chance to mentor those kids. So that means a quarter of our kids are not getting what they need. And if we don't have the staff to be able to test them, which has been our problem before, if they can't be tested, they can't get into remediation programs. They're not put on IEPs. They're not dealt with at home because their parents have not been able to do their own education. So to be able to advocate for their children is something they don't know how to do. So the only ones who can are the teachers that are there seeing them every day. In our district, we looked at budget cuts the last 7 years. And I was on part of the budget committee where we had parents, we had students, we had teachers, we had administrators, we had bankers from the area, and we made some really ugly cuts that you had to choose which part of the child wasn't going to be taken care of. With what you're proposing for the budgets, now we're looking at, and I was absolutely amazed that as good as what we're talking about for a budget here is, Westland Wilsonville would be looking at a $1.4 million deficit to keep what we have now. Not even talking about what future plans were, which were in the middle schools for literacy issues, to bring in 3 instructional coordinators who would coordinate reading and literacy for our middle school students only. That'd be their whole focus. To bring these kids in my classroom where my textbooks are written at an 8.2 level, these kids are reading at third grade level. They've moved around so much that they don't get the remediation that they need, and yet we're being held accountable for testing, when test is up, to do these things, which is an insanity. There's no child or adult that keep up with that kind of a demand. So we're hoping that you'll see the need for not just the money. Money's not going to be the fix. The fix is going to be the people in the classrooms and keeping the people in the classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just following up on your last comment, as a veteran teacher, I don't know in your specific, in the people that teach at your school or in the circle that you know in your district, I don't know what the percentages are in terms of retention and, people staying in the job, but...
We have 13 new teachers, and of those, we have 8 that are thinking of other jobs.
So
they haven't even made probation yet at 3 years.
So when we're looking at the budgets that we're looking at, is there anything that you... Why have you stayed for so long? What do you think can be done from our perspective, in other words?
Mentoring is huge to keep teachers who have experience. I know I'm a more expensive teacher at 28 years than a newbie coming out, but I also know that I've learned the hard way by the things that I've had to do, what works with kids. And I think keeping the people in the classroom, I know that at a business, we've had some of our school board members who have said, I can run my business a whole lot cheaper than what you're doing. But they don't have children that deal with things at home and then can't function in school on a daily basis like a machine can. I don't always get a kid ready to learn 5 days a week. They've had fights at home. We've got kids that are on meth. We're trying to deal with kids who... I've got a kid who's got ADHD and he's like a little jumping bean all the time. He's 6 foot tall. In the 8th grade. Yeah. And he can't keep focus because his mom can't afford to give him the medication that he needs, and he doesn't meet the qualifications for the financial to go onto the Oregon Medical Plan, and we've got a teacher that pays for his lunch every day because his parent can't do it. And that's the only good meal he gets a day is at school. So unless we have people in the classroom that know the kids, and with my 119 kids, I'm still expected to know what's going on in their house and what they're doing on the weekend. And that affects what they do in my science classroom to pass the test.
Sure. Senator Devlin.
We went through a process over a number of years in terms of looking at things that might help schools. Obviously, funding is one of those issues, but in terms of things that you could make as targeted expenditures, much like the school improvement fund that we're trying to create this session. And we would come up with evidence-based things that would look very good at the elementary level and reduced class sizes there and covering all Head Start children and full-day kindergarten. And then we'd come up with a few things at the high school level, but not as clear in terms of, like, retention programs, some things providing students more options so that they, if they've lost interest, that maybe there were some things to keep them in school longer. But middle school has always been a challenge to us.
And I can say in terms of the young people that have worked for me, some of them, a few of them have wanted to be teachers. They've wanted to be high school teachers, or they've wanted to be grade school teachers. I've asked them those questions about wanting to be middle school teachers, and they said, thank you, but no thanks.
Yeah, and see, I've done everything from third to eighth, and what I like about the eighth grade is they're right at that cusp that if you can get them with their confidence and hook into somebody or something in the school, you've made the swing to get them to the rigors of high school.
Yeah. The question I have, and maybe that's part of it, is with the school improvement fund, what would you see as an investment in middle schools that would help? Because we do think that we are losing some kids in middle schools.
Mm-hmm. The connection's got to be with people. You can't dump it into a program. They've got to make connections with teachers. There's got to be a way to fund mentoring programs with teachers. You know, the big brother, big sister program idea where you've got a mentor. In our school right now, we have somewhere around 68 students that are on mentor programs, where if you were having a need, you would be under my supervision every single day, and I had to make a personal connection with you. And a lot of the kids that we're seeing that are at risk in middle school aren't making that connection with an adult that's responsible for them, and their parents are either unable to do that or haven't seen the need for it. And we get them 6.5 hours a day. We've got the highest chance if we have the people and the funding to do that with them. So funding programs that teachers at the local level find to be important, whether it's getting together after school for clubs and having money to be able to fund those things. Or I think every place is going to be different. Madras isn't going to have the same needs I'll have in Westland Wilsonville.
Mm-hmm. So I think just in comment there that I think a lot of school districts that I've seen at both the junior high and middle school level have cut out a lot of activities. Some of them don't hardly have anything.
There's hardly anything left. We had sports for 1 year cut out, and it was absolutely devastating to the amount of kids that bought into the school for the next year.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford.
Maybe there's a coincidence here. You found three middle school teachers who are willing to give up their afternoons from their
my prep time.
So there are hundreds of middle school students running around.
Amok.
Is that what you're telling us?
Watch out, back. Well, good afternoon, Chairman Glazio and members of the Education Subcommittee. My name is Tony Crawford, and I live in Canby, where I've been a social studies teacher at Ackerman Middle School for the past 27 years. Over the years of my career, I can say that I have seen the worst of times and the best of times regarding funding for public education in Oregon. I look forward to the good times yet to come, and I thank you for the opportunity to address the subcommittee this afternoon. Just yesterday, I was discussing class sizes with several of my colleagues during our lunch break. My current 7th grade geography classes range between 30 to 35 students. These numbers have been consistent over the past 6 years. Other classes up and down the hallway have similar enrollment. I found myself comparing my first 5 years of my teaching career in the 1980s with three of my colleagues, each in the first few years of their careers. I shared how I had classes that ranged from 12 through 22 students. In those days, we complained if we had 25 students in a single class. Now 25 students seems like a breath of fresh air. Regarding class size, I share with the parents of my students that if all I were to do each and every day is to spend one-on-one time with each student, considering 60-minute classes with 30 students in each class, my starting point is a mere 2 minutes with each student each day. Of course, during a given class period, I am expected to teach a lesson, take attendance, monitor and adjust to the needs of the class, respond to questions, and assess student learning. By the time I meet all of my regular duties, I may have perhaps as many as 30 seconds remaining to speak individually with each student each day. Large class sizes are not in the best interest of our students. I also wish to share with the subcommittee this afternoon a few of the resources from my middle school geography classroom. I have with me this nice globe. Now, no, I'm not going to ask members of the committee to point and name particular locations. I won't do that to you. But I do have this nice globe, and in my classroom I have cooperative groups of four. Each group has a globe to share. However, the group that receives this particular globe has to make adjustments to their lesson. Mm-hmm. You see, if you look carefully right here, you will find the Soviet Union and East Germany and other countries that no longer exist. Now, this can be a particularly nice resource for a historic perspective. However, my students describe it as weak when studying our contemporary world. The second item I have is one of our classroom atlases we use pretty much on a daily basis in my class. And you'll notice that this particular atlas is fairly well worn, and so that's good news because it's well used. But on the downside, these paperback atlases have a short lifespan. And unfortunately, we've not had adequate funding in recent years to purchase replacement copies. So we use tape and staples to cord the books together, and I am looking forward to acquiring a new set for next year's students. The third resource we use on an almost daily basis in our classroom is the World Almanac. I teach a process in my class that requires students to gather, organize, and analyze data prior to responding to a given question. Now, the process works great, and the students are developing some strong skills. The only downside is the data we have available is a little bit dated. You see, our most updated set of World Almanacs is the 2003 edition here. Now, the good news is I do have enough of these, one for each student in my class. And I do know that we can access current data on the Internet. However, this requires massive copying and placing stress on our school paper supply and my quota on the copy machine. Now, the final resource that I did not bring is the last remaining pull-down wall map I have in my classroom. The map... where are we going to put it? Yeah. So the map is of Africa and features my own marking pen lines, updating political borders and names of countries. Most notable is the country formerly named Zaire. You know, the current name is Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, this name was given by the revolutionaries who seized control of that country 10 years ago. And it's not to be confused with its neighbor to the west called the Republic of Congo. Now, I do, by the way, remind my students that a geographer's fear is that if Cameroon, the country west of Congo, changes its name to Congo, then what we have in Central Africa is a Congo line. 2, 3, 4. Okay. Now. And by the way, I did not even mention the out-of-date textbooks that occupy shelf space in my classroom. Enough said on that topic. Now, for the record, I really do wish to be clear that my comments are not to suggest any irresponsibility by the Canby School District or the administration of the district. I work for a very, very good school district. I really appreciate being there. I've enjoyed my entire career in that district. But our district, just like many others in Oregon, is simply doing the best that it can under the circumstances. I include in my written testimony a report of budget cuts experienced by the Canby School District over the past 5 years. We've reduced our operating budget by $5.6 million over that period of time. A review of these cuts reminds us that the loss of programs and staff that has been the trend in K-12 education in recent memory. People who know me say that I'm an optimist, therefore I cannot help but talk about the better times we anticipate in my school, in my classroom, as a result of the current legislative session. As you work towards closing the funding gap between current status and the quality education model, I wish to shed light on what that effort means to the students I work with each and every day. The ability to purchase up-to-date resource materials is very important to me and to my students. I have already submitted my wish list to my building principal, a new set of atlases, a new set of almanacs, and a new set of globes. And if there's any additional money, then we can start talking about the wall maps for the classroom. Nothing extravagant, just the basics. I truly appreciate the incredible gains students such as mine will be able to experience with the proposed K-12 funding increase currently on the table. the gains will be even greater as we move towards fully funding QEM. In the Camby School District, this means the ability to bring back some lost programs such as foreign languages, library services, counselors, PE, music, and even after-school sports. The ability to hire additional teachers to reduce class size will also benefit students. Returning the support staff hiring ratio to levels of just 5 years ago will benefit all students, especially those who are special education or English language learner status. I opened my comments by saying that I'd seen the best and worst of times for funding public education in Oregon. I believe we've weathered the storm of inadequate funding over the past 6 years. I see better times on the horizon. I hope this afternoon I was able to bring home what the budget numbers considered by the legislature mean when they settle upon classrooms and students such as my own. I look forward to the funding increase being proposed for the next biennium. I look forward as well to the day we achieve full funding for the Oregon Quality Education Model. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Well, at least with the outdated materials, you explained something for me. I was trying to figure out why I had an intern who thought Nixon was still the president and was looking forward to a vacation in Rhodesia. So now you've answered that for me, so I appreciate it. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment, Mr. Crawford. My son has his degree in geography, and he's going back to school to get his master's to be a teacher. And if he can be anything as entertaining as you or as informative and fun for your students, then I know he's chosen the right career. So thank you. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Senator Walker. And I would advise your son to investigate the resources of the Oregon Geographic Alliance, an organization that is the state affiliate of the National Geographic Society. We could visit later about details.
I'll do that. He's 29 years old, soon to be 29. He's finally decided what he wants to be when he grows up. So I'm very pleased.
There is hope.
It happens.
Questions, comments? Well, thank you, all four of you. It's, again, it's kind of a cliche, but to have people who are in the classroom to help, you know, sort of give some context to the numbers and what we're talking about here, it's very helpful information, and we do appreciate you take, you know, first of all, what you do, and secondly, for coming down and testifying, and thank you for what you do. Appreciate
also,
it.
Mr. Chair, I did want to thank Ms. Wilma Whelan. You probably don't have anything to do with this one, but this is in big type, and this is in small type, and we all have failing eyes, so I loved reading this one. It's much better than this one. Thank you.
Future people testifying take note. So. Thank you again very much.
Thank you very much.
So was there anyone else who perhaps has not signed up, wants to testify in the public hearing today? Okay, so
very tough to age.
No, you're okay. All right. he's getting very nervous. All right, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 5020 and 5021, and we are adjourned. Thank you.